You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 30th of March 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. I'm just going to remind people that if they want to help out with my defence in the court case later on this year, and if they're willing to provide a testimonial about why they listen to Radio Albion and how it makes them feel, I would really appreciate some names being put with the previous testimonials that have already been given so that we can use them in court, because we're not allowed to use anonymous ones. So if any of you could send a message to stormersubs@hushmail.com and let me know a name and a phone number, and then my solicitor can call you up and draft the testimonial into a format that is acceptable to the court, and it can be used to help with my defence. And today I want to get back into the Online Harms Bill, the white paper that the government have produced last week, which is basically a censor's charter. It means that they can go after people that haven't broken the law, but that are just saying things that are uncomfortable for the government. And they can make the tech companies that own the big platforms remove that content, even though it's not illegal. They're effectively saying that conversation online needs to be even more strictly regulated than conversation in public. And of course, lots of people have criticisms of government policies and critiques of society, and it effectively means that we will just be banned from talking about these problems and trying to find solutions to them. It's as if the government think that they can just pretend that these problems aren't there, then they will just go away. Whereas the fact of the matter is that these problems will just get worse, and it means that people will feel that they have no outlet for their concerns, and that nobody is listening to their concerns. It may even drive an increase in violence, actual physical violence, preventing people from being able to talk about the problems that they see. And you would think that the government would be pleased that it had citizens that were concerned about what is going on in society and were concerned with identifying the root causes of them and trying to put things in place to help solve them. But instead, they just wish to silence people. Well, getting back into what Reclaim the Net have to say about this bill, the bill gives the Culture Secretary the power to decide on and designate priority content that is harmful. And that basically means the Culture Secretary can just tell Big Tech, we don't want people talking about this particular subject. And then these platforms have to ban people from talking about the subject, even when what they're saying is completely legal. So it means that the Culture Secretary can just decide arbitrarily what she or he wants to be censored online. And it's pretty much all websites that they're saying are going to have to go along with this. All websites that have a search function, I think, is one of their criteria. And the mainstream media are completely exempt from this. They don't have to go along with this. And they've also got a clause for articles or content that is of democratic importance. And you would think that social commentary would be of democratic importance, but they say that only websites that are regulated are able to use this clause, contents of democratic importance, and it has to be specifically talking about one particular area. So again, they're saying that the BBC and the mainstream media, they can use this democratic importance clause. I would suggest that all free speech is of democratic importance, and people should be encouraged to highlight the problems that they see in society in the hopes that the government will take notice of it and help solve them and pay attention to what people are saying. You'd think the government would want to know what people are saying rather than just drive conversation underground. Once the Secretary of State has designated this content, social media platforms and search engines that fall under the scope of the bill's regulations have to use proportionate systems and processes to prevent children from encountering this priority content. These platforms are also required to specify in their terms of service how they will tackle priority content that is deemed to be harmful to adults and apply these measures consistently. So it's not just about children. They're going to be deciding what is harmful for adults to see, criticism of government policy. Additionally, the Culture Secretary gets the power to decide the user number and feature thresholds that determine whether a company falls under the scope of these requirements to remove and tackle priority content. So again, it's pretty much arbitrary. The Culture Secretary could see a website that she doesn't particularly like, and she can just decide that they're over the number and they're over the feature threshold, and therefore they need to come under this bill and they need to be censored or taken down. Collectively, these provisions give the Culture Secretary unprecedentedly broad powers to not only choose the types of speech that are to be allowed, but also to set the rules around which platforms have to censor content. So it could be continually changing what sort of content it is that they want to be censored. I mean, it's quite incredible, isn't it? They tell us that this sort of thing goes on in China, they tell us it goes on in Russia, and how we are the free world and we protect free speech. But in actual fact, I think we're some of the worst for this. I mean, in China, they will encourage you to identify problems that are there with policy so that they can amend these problems. They don't want to hide things and cover things up. You can't directly criticize the Communist Party. You can't say, well, the Communist Party needs to go. But you can certainly criticize policies that the Communist Party puts in place and parts of those policies, and they encourage that. And that's why they put things in place such as a drive to improve masculinity, which they're involved in at the moment. And they don't want to feature feminine men as role models because they can see that there is a problem with the average testosterone levels. So they're trying to compensate for that. And of course, when we point out there's a problem with the testosterone levels and there's a rise in gender dysphoria because of it, we're then accused of hate speech because it's as if we're criticizing the transgenders themselves when we're actually trying to identify a problem and saying the government are not dealing with this problem in the correct way. They are encouraging the gender dysphoria rather than encouraging people to be happy with the gender that they are. I mean, that's just one instance of this. One of the UK government's main talking points when pushing the online safety bill has been that news content will be completely exempt from any regulation under the bill. However, the rules that govern these exemptions are written in a way that favours large media outlets and makes it difficult for small independent outlets to qualify. So they essentially they exempt all the big mainstream news companies, and they are going after all the independent journalists and all the alternative news sites. For starters, the state-funded media outlets, the BBC and S4C, automatically qualify as recognised news publishers, the standard that determines whether a publisher is exempt from the bill's regulations. Other outlets need to either hold a licence under the Broadcasting Act 1990 or 1996, or meet numerous conditions, which include publishing news-related material that is created by different persons, having a registered office or business address in the UK, making the name and address of the outlet's owner public, being subject to a standards code and editorial control, and having a complaints procedure. So they're effectively saying you have to have a business, you have to have more than one person that is working there, it has to be registered. I mean, it's just sounding the death of alternative media and independent journalism. I mean, the whole age of the internet was revolutionized by blogging and people being able to write their own thoughts down, talk about what they saw going on around them, whether it was just talking about music or talking about sport or whether talking about politics and more important things and identifying problems in society. And then you had the growth of independent journalism, especially with the smartphones and with the cameras, and people could set up their own blogs and they could feature everything on there. They could have their own news stories, be their own journalist, take their own pictures, have their own editorial, have a different view to what was being promoted on the mainstream media. And surely that is a good thing. And yet what they're doing here is they're trying to undermine all of that. And they're trying to set the parameters of what can be talked about. And those parameters are going to be set by the culture secretary. And we know how they feel about nationalists. It's essentially another way of just removing the opposition entirely, just like they have done in Ukraine. I guess they've done it a little bit more extreme over there. They've actually just completely removed the opposition parties. They've disbanded them. They've banned opposition media. But effectively, it's a similar thing that we have here. Patriotic Alternative can't get past the Electoral Commission to set up a political party. And what we see here with this censorship, it's going to try and effectively remove any alternative media from advertising on social media. So all the various independent news networks that are out there that actually do use Twitter and Facebook, they would probably end up being removed because they'll say, well, even though their content is legal, it might be harmful to somebody to see, i.e. somebody might get hurt feelings when they see that sort of information if it's new to them. They're effectively wrapping everybody up in cotton wool and saying that people aren't sufficiently emotionally mature enough to see somebody having a different opinion to them or a different opinion to the mainstream narrative. They want to make sure that any independent publishers, independent journalists are all repeating exactly the same as the mainstream media. And the internet, really, it was like public access TV in America. You had your mainstream television, channels, and then they also had public access TV where anybody could make their own TV and people could watch it. It didn't have a very large audience, but it did mean that people could talk about things from their point of view to a niche audience. And then you had a similar thing with YouTube, where that was sort of opened up to the whole world. The whole world could then make their own channels. And then as soon as people start talking about things in a different way to the way that the government do and having a different opinion on things such as diversity, they instantly want to censor it. And they don't want to have a conversation about these subjects. They just want to pretend that everybody goes along with it and that there is no question over whether multiculturalism is a good thing. It's very dishonest, really. When you think we're supposed to have a democracy which is built upon free speech, built upon debate, and we're supposed to be able to talk about and criticize any policy of the government, and because we're able to do that, that the best policies are supposed to rise to the top with the most support. But if you prevent people from talking about some policies or critiquing some policies, then you're never going to get the best policies rising to the top, are you? Because any problems that are highlighted are not going to be highlighted, and they're just going to continue, and the problems are just going to continue. UK Culture Secretary Nadine Dorries, that's the lady that is responsible for this, that will be deciding what should and shouldn't be censored, has responded to criticism that the Online Safety Bill is a censor's charter by pointing to the bill's duties to protect free speech. However, these duties and the duties for platforms to protect user privacy are so weak that they have no impact when platforms comply with the bill's obligations to tackle harmful content. I mean, it basically says that these companies have a duty to not go after one particular side of the political spectrum more than the other. But if they're going to be fined with massive fines if they allow content which is completely legal, but that which the culture secretary has determined could hurt somebody's feelings, then they're going to need to be overly zealous in their removal of this sort of content so that they don't actually get fined. So how is that going to protect free speech? You don't have free speech. If you cannot say anything that somebody else might find uncomfortable, then you don't have free speech. I mean, it's like saying, well, you can't say anything that can upset criminals and people that have done bad things, because they might get upset if you point these things out. It's essentially just means that all these problems in society can just continue to happen, and they just want to sweep it all under the carpet and pretend that nobody is noticing. And that's what a lot of this is about. It's people notice patterns, and they talk about these patterns and they highlight them, and then they get their channel taken down, or they get the police coming round and arresting them, saying that they're inciting hate by noticing these patterns. Doesn't mean the patterns are going to go away. I mean, all these problems that we have today, they've been increasing year on year on year, and all the ways that the government tries to tackle them, they haven't succeeded, have they? Crime rate keeps going up, sexual offences keep going up, mugging goes up, stabbings goes up. I mean, all these problems and communities being divided, not having a sense of community, that is being increased, all these sorts of things that we would say are down to this policy of multiculturalism are increasing. And I don't see why they want to prevent people from saying that. And there are so many studies that back up the things that we say, and you need to have free speech to talk about these things. And if you're going to say, well, you can't mention, say, the crime rate, the higher crime rate that is linked to some of these communities, then you don't have free speech, do you? And it means that particular problem is just going to increase, and it's going to get worse, and they're going to feel as if they can get away with doing whatever they like because nobody's allowed to criticize them. Because if they criticize them, then that could cause emotional harm to them. So it's going to be removed from the internet. And it is really shocking when you think that America's free speech policy and their ideas about free speech, they got all of that from Britain. We used to be really proud of the fact that we could criticise the king, and you can still criticise the king, of course, but you certainly can't criticise aspects of the king's government's policy. The bill pays lip service to the idea that platforms should have regard to the importance of protecting users' right to freedom of expression within the law, and that they should be protecting users from a breach of any statutory provision or rule of law concerning privacy. So that they should have a regard to free speech, but they're not being told, well, you have to allow content that doesn't break the law. They're being told, well, you have to remove the content that we tell you to, even if it doesn't break the law. And you can compare that to the way that Hungary have dealt with these platforms, and Poland, and they've brought laws in that if Facebook or Twitter or what have you, if they remove content that doesn't break the law, then they're going to be fined for that. So what we've got in with our Conservative Party in Britain is they're doing the opposite of the equivalent of the Conservative Party in Hungary and Poland, whilst telling us that they are protecting free speech. They're actually doing more harm to free speech than any government before them. If platforms comply with these overreaching obligations to tackle this so-called harmful but legal speech, as outlined in the bill, they will by default be at odds with the idea of protecting speech rights and privacy. You've also got the fact that whistleblowers need to remain anonymous if they're going to blow the whistle on terrible things that are happening. Say you're going to be blowing the whistle on something that's happened in the NHS. If they take away the right to privacy, you're going to take away that route to blowing the whistle on all sorts of things. It's not just going to harm nationalists. It's just going to harm highlighting bad behaviour all around. The bill itself is the biggest threat to free speech and privacy in living memory, and big tech platforms have no history of protecting either. Provisions for privacy should not mean social media monopolists acting as a guardian of user privacy. They should be in place to protect citizens' data from the platforms themselves. This goes down to who actually owns the content that is being put up there. And who owns your details? And you want to remain private. You don't want all these companies to have all your data and to be harvesting all the information about you that they can so that they can sell them on. But even worse than that, the government is saying, well, you need to harvest all this stuff. You need to get all this information from the users, and then you need to make it accessible to us. I think Telegram have refused to do this. That's why a lot of people use Telegram. Russia was requiring that they hand over all their details to Russia, and they refused. And then I think the British government was saying that they wanted to have ghost chat room members. So any chat room that was actually set up, they wanted to have a ghost member that was in there that nobody could see, so that the intelligence services could then pretend to be that member and they could silently watch everything that was going on in there. And that's effectively saying that nobody is allowed to have a private conversation without the government snooping on them. And this is effectively what's going on here. And people may say, well, if you haven't done anything wrong, then why would you be concerned? But it's effectively saying, because if you're talking to somebody in a chat room, it's the equivalent of talking to somebody in a pub. It's effectively saying that all the pubs in the land or anywhere where people can have a conversation, there should be a microphone there recording everything that's said so that the government can listen to it, so that they can check what you are speaking about. And that's rather similar to North Korea, that has a television in everyone's home. I'm not sure if that television also records what people are saying, but they have a television that comes on to show them the government propaganda. And it's just the reverse of that. And they're doing this online. So your text conversations that you're having with people that you think are private, your private messages on these platforms, they want them to all be accessible to the government as well. Nadine Dorries has tried to defend the online safety bill by claiming that controversial obligations in the bill, such as the requirement to tackle legal but harmful content, only apply to the biggest platforms. However, the bill's sweeping terms ensure that most social media platforms and search engines, regardless of their size, are subject to some of its requirements. So this is some of the ways that they're trying to get around any bad publicity for this. They're just saying, it's just for big tech here, but it's not. It's for the smaller independent producers. User-to-user services, internet services where content can be generated, uploaded, or shared, and search services, internet services that include a search engine, fall under the scope of the bill's requirements if they have a significant number of UK users. So they're effectively saying there that any website or blog where content is uploaded and then shared to other people comes under the remit of this bill. Any website that has the UK as one of their target markets or are capable of being used in the UK. So that's just every website in the world, isn't it? It's a worldwide web. The UK can access anything that's on there. And there are reasonable grounds to believe that there is a material risk of significant harm to individuals in the United Kingdom presented by user-generated content or search content. And by significant harm, they don't mean significant physical harm, people making physical threats. They just mean emotional distress. And as we know, all our opponents on the left, they claim that they suffer from emotional distress at hearing us advocating for things that are going to be of benefit to the indigenous British people. It causes them emotional distress just to hear somebody say it's okay to be white or white lives matter too, you know. Since the definition of harm in the online safety bill is so vague, the final requirement could be applied to almost any social media platform or search engine that can be accessed in the UK. The only exemptions are services or parts of a service that enable emails, SMS and MMS messages, one-to-one live oral communications, and content where the function is to identify a user of an internet service, such as usernames and profile pics. So they're not going to censor your username, and you can still have one-to-one communications with people, but anything else, they want to tell you what you can and cannot speak about. UK rights groups and proponents have been almost unanimous in their criticism of the Online Safety Bill. Mark Johnson, legal and policy officer at civil liberties group Big Brother Watch, said, "This is a censors charter that will give state backing to big tech censorship on a scale that we have never seen before." Matthew Lesh, head of public policy at the think tank Institute of Economic Affairs, described the bill's threats to imprison tech executives as eerily similar to how Russia and other authoritarian countries are currently behaving. And he warned that it is an attack on free speech and entrepreneurialism. That's the other side to this. You have these independent journalists that have set up their own websites, tried to set up their own way of doing things because they've been banned from the mainstream platforms, even though they haven't broken any law. And now they're going to go after them and say, well, even your little website here has to come under Ofcom. And if we don't like what you're saying, we're going to just define it as legal but harmful. An impact assessment published last year estimated that the expected total cost of the bill will be a staggering £2.1 billion. I guess that is just to implement this and have Ofcom overlooking everything. I mean, it would be so much simpler just to say, well, why don't we just go with the American laws and have free speech? And if you don't want to see what you're seeing, if you don't like what you're hearing, if you don't like what somebody else's opinion is, why don't you just block them? Or don't go on their page. Who gave these people the right to tell you what you can and cannot learn about or can or cannot read? I mean, it goes right against human rights, right against the individualism that is supposedly so sacrosanct to democracy that people have an individual right to be an individual, but only if you're going to be the individual of their choosing and only if you're going to talk positively about certain government policies. It's straight out of 1984. It really is. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.